Welcome to Dialogues in Afro-Latinidad, a podcast dedicated to amplifying and elevating Afro-Latinx histories, cultures, and communities across the Americas and beyond. I'm your host, Dr. Michelle Reed Vasquez. Join us for conversations with experts and artists to learn more about Afro-Latinidad. Venga. Hello, our guest today is Dr. Maria Andrea dos Santos Soares. She is an associate professor at the Institute of Humanities at University for Africa Brazil Lusophone Integration in Bahia and a collaborator professor at the African and Ethnic Studies Graduate Program. She earned her PhD in social anthropology at the University of Texas at Austin, and her teaching and research focus on archives, monuments, and memories of the transatlantic slave trade and colonization in Brazil and the West Coast of Africa, the role of Afro-diasporic performance practices in the nation, and the transformation of Black identities. She has published articles and book chapters in English and Portuguese, including an article in Humanities MDPI and an essay in the edited collection Trajectories of Empire, Trans-Hispanic Reflections of the African Diaspora. She is currently working on her book manuscript, Performances and Foundational Narratives of Blackness and Being in Brazil. Maria, thanks so much for joining me today. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Michelle. I'm very glad to be here. Very excited about the questions you are proposing for this interview. At first, I feel like, oh my God, do you still know how to talk about this in a second language? Because I'm far from English speaking scenarios for a while since I got into the Unilab, the university where I'm working. But I'm thrilled to be talking about these subjects, because when I start to prepare for your talk, I'll start to realize how many things I could still say, especially some that are related to the subjects of my upcoming book. So I think I can use this moment also to deep into the subjects issue I want to talk about.
Well, fantastic. We're so happy to have you. So I want to jump right in. So I know you were born and raised in southern Brazil and in Rio Grande. I don't want to butcher the Portuguese, but Rio Grande do Sul.
Do Sul.
Do Sul. And you're now a scholar of Afro-Brazilian culture in Bahia. So how did you become interested? How did this whole process evolve? What sparked your curiosity?
Oh, well, this is an amazing question. It's like my own beginnings, and I need to go back a little bit. Like, situating that Rio Grande do Sul is one of the whitest states in Brazil. It's a state that praises its European roots, which are not totally true, but it's a movement related to the immigration policies. Now, I'm into whitening Brazil in the late 19th century, first decades of the 20th century. But still, Rio Grande do Sul, Santa Catarina, and Paraná, the southern states, they praise itself and take great pride in being like an European descendant state. And I am a Black woman or Afro-Brazilian woman from the one of the white states, which means that there is Black populations in Black communities in the whole southern Brazil, as there are indigenous communities, no? For a long time that have been erased from the national narrative and from the state's narrative about this presence, this culture, and the contributions of these groups to the state, to the formation of the state. So this is one of the things that raised my curiosity, like being born and notice that there's something different about me and my family, the other few Black folks that I met occasionally, be born and raised in the center of this Italo and German descent culture, right? And then I moved to Santa Maria to graduate in college, in theater. My degree was in theater education, art education, especially theater. And then I started to realize something curious there, like basically the only Black body there, like they were expect to perform a certain virtuosity, like where is the written? You don't know how to dance samba, you don't know how to dance capoeira, you don't know. Then I realized that there is first this white projection about what black person should be doing or how should behave or, you know, perform. But also I noticed a discrepancy between some discourses about national identity, like black culture, Afro-Brazilian culture, the racial democracy idea of three races that create Brazil, and noticing the difference in terms of treatment, the roles in theater that were gave to me, the ways that people romanticize capoeira, traditional Afro-Brazilian practices, and at the same time criminalizing black youth expressions, like the hip-hop that's starting at that time in this city, in Santa Maria. These things make me interested in discuss two things. What is Brazilian culture? And where is the Afro-Brazilian identity and role in this culture? So this makes me move from theater to anthropology, social anthropology, still with a focus on performance, on black performance. Né? So my entrance on performance go through anthropology of performance and performance studies. That's how I become interested. Mm-hmm. That's also like a heavily personal component in that, like coming from a very white space where I had no opportunity to participate in something like black culture, Afro-Brazilian culture. I became deeply invested as a performer and as an intellectual to build a black identity, né? through engaging black arts, to learn and do things that belongs to black people. And also, This also was amazing. The first time I visited Bahia was the first time that I traveled to Uruguay, where they have like the very important presence of Afro-Uruguayans and their influence in the music, in Uruguay and Argentina, because now we know that the tango, the very traditional Argentinian form, has a black basis from candombe. You know? So learn about these things made me realize a whole layer of histories that weren't have been told.
Yes, absolutely. I also want to kind of dig a little deeper into that. So obviously you had those very personal moments growing up, but what are one or two kind of defining moments of your journey? Was it when you were in college or attending a conference or even a street encounter? What were some of the defining moments where you said, okay, yes.
There is one that I know for sure there is. We were the university housing, the student housing in mm-hmm. Santa Maria. This is before the 2000, decades ago. And I was already in this building, like doing capoeira class, samba class, dança dos orixás class, candombe class, Afro-Peruvian class, and Black's Beautiful now. And then we heard some friends, they were from the capoeira ensemble, but one of the guys, he also participated in the hip-hop movement. That was the start in Santa Maria. And the way that even the capoeira ensemble looked to this new culture was like not in a very good way. It was associated like a ghetto thing, like or something like a foreign culture coming out of nowhere. Right. But then I was with them and this guy, he played a video clip from the Racionais MCs. Racionais MCs is the most important hip-hop group in Brazil. And that moment changed something. That was the moment, the realization that there was a dissonance, that something was in disagreement between the romanticization of something that the black youth was not really engaged with, something new and like the violence, the crude denounce that the rap lyrics present. And this opened a totally new world to me that saw that my master thesis was with a hip hop collective in Porto Alegre, né? During the master degree in anthropology. So that was on the third. And the second, so this opens up a stage of my life that is the passing to theater, to social anthropology, until the UT. And the doctoral degree at UT Austin, and then meeting some radical theories like the Afro-pessimism and Black optimism, or all the deep philosophical thought with Spillers and Hartman and Fanon. And a new moment, I would situate in 2018, after coming to Bahia and start working at Unilab. So that's a moment of being in Bahia, considered like the Black Rome, no? the biggest Black city in the world outside Africa, and so. And also the fact of being a Black university, or the first university I'm to promote the interchange with the African countries, Portuguese African countries. But so the encounter of different groups, especially from Guinea and Angola, where the most part of our students come from, make me realize how many more things I have to learn. That's mean a whole theoretical, cultural, aesthetical, artistical body of knowledge coming from these places, you know, so make me look deeper into the works of Black anthropologists, African anthropologists, philosophers, gender studies, political scientists. You know. So I would say that now I am in this new phase, and that's why also I want to conclude a book on performance, because now I'm start looking to this different connections between the Brazilian coast, especially the northeast coast, and the west coast of Africa, with all the buildings and fortifications erecting the same architectonical styles, because they are serving the same purpose, and the same way that patrimonialization or heritage politics are still very colonial, or have a certain coloniality in the ways they retell the story.
Those are some incredible moments, and I love the way that you took those and continue to build on your knowledge base, your evolution as a scholar, as a lifelong learner about Black culture, Black and Afro-Brazilian culture. And in terms of Afro-Latinidad, I know you're passionate about the Black diaspora as a whole, and certainly issues surrounding Blackness and identity. Tell me more about that evolution.
Well, because there are so many barriers, so many challenges, and so many advances, and so many resistance in all Black communities along the world, and so many things to do, so many pain, you could say, into thinking some like sad or horrible episodes that still Black communities are submitted to, but at the same time there is so much strength in the struggle, so many new and old and contemporary voice coming together and trying to hold up and say, let's keep moving, we can't move because you are here, right? And despite all the sadness and the injustice of anti-blackness violence, there is so much beauty, you know, and in our productions, in our ways of build community, of repair and heal communities, or change direction and adjust. But still, there is so much to be done, you know, in the face of this injustice. I think I lost a little bit my line of thinking, because I was to say something like very objective in terms of initiatives, not like in the Brazilian policies, né? In terms of legislation, the affirmation, the positive affirmation of, yes, I remember now. The positive affirmation of being Black, because it was a taboo in Brazil. Like, most of people would say anything but not that they are like black people or Afro-Brazilian. They would say I'm moreno, I'm pardo, I'm mulatto. It's still, this still occurs, but it's much less than, would say, like 30 years ago. We came a long way from racial democracy and everything is okay to affirmative action policies after the Durban conference. And one of the predictions made by Silvio Romero, a politician and intellectual from the 1930s, was that by 1990, before the 2000, the black population would disappear through miscegenation.
Oh, so yeah, of course.
When I looked to the well, guess what?
Guess what?
You were wrong. Mm-hmm. Here you are. So that's what I'm passionate about.
Mm-hmm. No, thank you for sharing that. I got some questions swirling around, but I'm going to continue, and hopefully they'll pop back up in a more clear form. But I want to also talk a little bit about, you mentioned the connection between Unilabi and West Africa, and I wonder if you could talk a little bit about how your work as a scholar helps us contribute to our understanding of that transnational connection of Afro-Latin America, or really Afro-diasporic communities, connecting with Afro-Latin America and beyond.
Amazing, yes, because this is like a central point of in your discussions here in Unilabi. For a long time, we have been totally apart from Africa, African continent. Most of the time, present for us like a place of no knowledge production, only for raw material. Like the whole anthropology and its links to colonization lead us to that. And also a place of precarity, of hungry, wild violence, wild, yeah. All this type of stereotypes and prejudice that were attached to idea of African and Africans. And consequently to African descendants, right? Mm-hmm. Was part of the same white supremacy worldview and construction of the modern world, right? Mm-hmm. But then the opportunity of being there and welcome these students, and also the cultural shock they have, also the Africans and the Black Brazilian, because our Afro-Brazilian studies also have a lot of projection. Even if they are activists, like Pan-Africanists, Brazilian Pan-Africanists, they have all this idealized image of Africa. Like they will be cultivating, worshipping the orishas, or, you know, preserving like 2,000 years old
traditions. Right.
And that's not the reality. Mm-hmm. So for the African students, when they come here, is a contrast, either for the part of Black Brazilian students with their idealized construction, as the part of normal folks who keep asking them questions like, there is cars in Africa, see lime? it's real. They are in a small city in Bahia where the Humanities Institute is located, and they go the whole time through this type of questioning and stereotypes also. So both the good, the wonderful Africa, the Black kings as the poor Africa, they are essentializing, and in a certain way, dehumanizing projections that we made. So this, and I think my experience in the field, and also the problematizations surrounding like what constitutes blackness, what's the positionality of blackness in a global perspective. There are things or subjects that helps to build a bridge and understand, for them also to understand what's meant the Middle Passage, because they don't know what meant, you know. And although many of my students, African students, I mean, when they first come to Brazil, they used to say that race is something that does not matter there. Mm-hmm. And it's true, because ethnicity and the ties and the religious affiliations and the family matters more in terms of identity. It's true. but at the same time, they start to recognize that there is a global structure that in every place in the world, a dark-skinned person will have the lower positions in a job, and they start realizing this in terms of their institutions or how the politics runs. Mm-hmm. And also start to realize how Brazil has intricate dynamics of race and racial encounters that's nothing like they used to think that they are. Yeah. Either when they think there is racism, is not race. Because see, they are in Bahia, the black Roma, Roma Negra, the black Roma. Mm-hmm. But even in Bahia, we have like a vibrant black culture. Like you can think that the Bahianos, né? They own the culture. But even then, the rates of executions, the military execution, unemployment, homelessness, drug addict, the mental problems, they are the same as in other. It's the same dynamics, of mm-hmm. racial hierarchies mm-hmm. in terms of power, at least. Hmm?
And so, thinking about that too, what would you say are some of the most urgent issues for Afro-Latin American communities, especially as they relate to your work on Afro-Brazilian culture?
Oh, yes, great. I would say the first, that's my main area of attuation would be education. The equal access and opportunity to education, to all levels of education, is a key issue in terms of the uplift and the well-being, the promotion of rights for black communities, right? Mm-hmm. Now with the COVID and all the economic crisis, we know for statistical proof that the black communities were the more impacted in terms of health and that's too, but also in terms of leaving school and education because they don't have the means to follow up with online class because they don't have a notebook or internet access. It's still impacted more severely black students. So right now you have the rates of illiteracy growing up again after decades of decreasing, and the illiteracy is higher among black communities. So education is a key. And in education, I also like to add, it's not only having access to be on the school or in the college or having a doctoral degree, but also that the reference, that the bibliography, that the epistemologies, that the methodologies, they mm-hmm. could incorporate some other cosmo perceptions, some other worldviews, some other voices and intellectuals. So this is a real struggle because even in terms of publishing market, you are little behind. If I can say like. If you have like an international scholar, anyone, I'm not criticizing none of the great European thinkers in gender and, but they are almost immediately translate in Brazilian market, right? Mm-hmm. And you have like Angela Davis, Woman Race in Class, that's from 1982, 81, was translated like just a few years ago, so almost 30 years. Mm-hmm. After the publication, Du Bois, I think, was in the 90s. Orlando Patterson was 2007. Do you understand what I'm saying? What is there is an intellectual gap in terms. So this is key. All levels of access to all levels of education and also an equal or at least less unequal distribution of in terms of voices and intellectual productions being taught in the Brazilian academy. Second would be, of course, in terms of public security, we have a very deeply rooted problem of state violence in Brazilian society. That's either the legacy of colonial imperial slavery system eras, right? Like the military police in Rio de Janeiro was created to contain, to refrain to black populations, right? With very specific laws being sanctioned to imprison anyone that is doing capoeira or samba, for example, right? So this is a history of state allowed violence against these bodies, and that's deeply ingrained in the national mentality. So this is an issue. Plus, we had a history also of military dictatorship and all these cases of torturing and missing persons. So these forces still are very strong in Brazil. And so you have this issue in terms of state violence against black populations. Huh? So a third one would be in terms of decision making, or place. Okay, so Afro-Brazilian culture represents a certain idea of national identity. We're vibrant, we are very innovative in terms of our productions, but at the same time, in terms of political representation, economic power, decision making, we are not there. Very slowly going, but you know, it's two steps and three backs and one step, so it's not working as was supposed to be working, so this is, and for the last, I would say, like, access to the land and property. That's something that was supposed to be in the plans for the crown, but then the republic came, and then all the documents were burned, and then nobody ever thought again in terms of, you know, reparation, or like a more serious idea of reparation, access and guarantee access to land. That's something that it happens a little bit in terms of quilombo communities, that would be like Maroons communities.
Right.
Some of, since the constitution, 1988 constitution, they are recognizing as traditional lands. But for a community to really get the access, really get the property, the titularization of a collective land, is very hard. Sometimes they are often threatened because they are in rural areas. They are constantly threatened by great farmers and old land owners. So those are really issues.
Yeah, these are, I mean, you laid out four, I mean, incredibly large but important issues that I think that people are grappling with across the diaspora in many instances. Mm-hmm. We have, I mean, I could talk to you the rest of the day, but I want to wrap up with our final question that we like to ask everyone. So then, in addition to your work, which we'll have featured on our episode page for this, for the podcast, what other kinds of resources would you recommend to people who want to learn more about Afro-Brazilian culture, history?
I have some things I prepared to show you.
Wonderful.
So this is the Dicionário das Relações Étnico-Raciais Contemporâneas. It's like a contemporary racial relations dictionary, like a handbook, a series of topics like affirmative action, Afrocentricity, anti-racism, anti-Semitism, whiteness, black cinema, colonialism, colorism, black consciousness, black culture, decoloniality, racial democracy, black diaspora, pan-Africanism, post-abolition, racial prejudice, quilombos, race, racialization. So a lot of topics.
Yes.
It's like a very introductory book in this regard. And I also like this. This one is from Professor Tania Caterie Hernandez.
Yes.
racial subordination in Brazil and Latin America. It's very enlightening in terms of, even in the face of having like anti-racist law, there is something like customary right that makes that white people and black people feel they have certain designed social place. It's a good one too. Well, we already talked about the trajectories of empire. I have an article on this one that talks about like these places of black memory and the disputes, the tourist disputes around this place, right? Mm-hmm. Like they are always in the head of the same cultural and promoters, agents, and not really in the hands of the black community. And I have some in literature. This one is Cidinha da Silva. It's a Brazilian writer. This is like Chronics, a Stop to Kill Us. And there is several narratives with real episodes, you know, of anti-black violence in Brazil. O livro Preto de Ariel, de Hamilton Borges dos Santos. He's the organizer of a very important black campaign that is Reage ou Será Morto, React or Be Killed. He is from Salvador, and he's very critical of this projection of the black Roman, and at the same time the rates of anti-black violence that the city has. And Água de Barrela, de Eliane Alves Cruz, is like part of a family memory, departing from the real story of one of the woman in her family. But then go back like many decades ago to Cachoeira in Bahia, in a engenho, it's like a sugarcane production in Cachoeira. Yes. Because here in Bahia, we are at the beginning of the Brazil, and this beginning is a lot of, you know, violence. <Yes. laughs> there's this other another one. I also start to look more in the production of indigenous artists and intellectuals. So this one is Ailton Krenak. He's from Minas Gerais, around the place that that had a very serious environment disaster with a mining company, you know, that polluted the whole river. So he's from this region, and he's very critical in the ways that capitalism uses the resources, né? Use nature, dominate, subjugate nature. And then he's thinking indigenous, né? Indigenous perspective, Native American perspectives about ideas to postpone the end of the world. So those are some amigos, like the artwork, the performance work of Ayrson Heráclito, the artist work of Rosana Paulino. Yes, I can have some. Yeah, that's so many. I have others here, but
no, this is a wonderful start, and we'll get the accurate information posted up on the episode page so that everyone can access that. Thank you so much for sharing your journey, for this conversation. I know in the pre-conversation, just learned so many things about what we have in common in terms of graduate training. And so that was really good to know. We're both graduate alum, PhD alum of UT Austin. So shout out to all the folks who finished from there.
No surprise.
Yes. So thank you so much for sharing this. And I look forward to all the good work that's coming from you in the future.
Thank you for this opportunity to help me to organize the ideas and then think in directions, also to build. You know, it's also good to have this exchange.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to subscribe and hear more episodes of Dialogues in Afro-Latinidad on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube. And go to michellereedvasquez.com to check out our episode resources and learn more about the Afro-Latinidad Studies Institute.